32 years ago, I loaded up my Ford Mustang in Lubbock, Texas, where I grew up. And I decided I was going to go off to college down in Temple Terrace, Florida. So everything that I practically owned fit easily in my Ford Mustang. In fact, I don't even think I had to use the trunk except for my golf clubs. That was about it. Just a few clothes, a couple of posters, Dallas Cowboy posters, of course, and I'm off. Said goodbye to my parents real early that morning. It was probably around 7 a.m., and I started driving. And I kept driving. Drove all the way through Dallas, Shreveport, Mississippi, and then made my way to Vicksburg, Mississippi, and then started heading down south, cutting my way to Mississippi. And I remember I pulled over in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, had a nice, nutritious dinner at a Burger King. For the first time in my life, I got a hotel room on my own without mom and dad there or anybody else at a Motel 6, the cheapest I could possibly find. And then I went to a little contraption. Some of you may have heard of these, may see them in the Smithsonian. They're called payphones. And I went up to that payphone and I took it off the hook and I said, I'd like to make a collect call, please. 806-799-7928, our home number. And my dad answered, and he accepted the charges, and then said, where have you been? I said, well, I've been driving. He goes, well, you should have called. When was I going to call? Because all I had in my car were my clothes, my poster, my golf clubs, but I did have a friend. Some of you may have heard of this friend. Some of you may know who he is. His name is Rand McNally. Ever heard of him? Comes in a little book, has a lot of pictures in it, you know, with all these lines going everywhere. Fascinating book, one for every state. And I said, Dad, it's just me and Rand McNally on the trip. He said, well, you call as soon as you get there. So I got in the car early that next morning, drove all the way to Tampa, and found another payphone to call home. Isn't it amazing how things have changed now? In fact, on my way just over here, I only had like a 25-minute drive from my house in Jonesville to get to your congregation tonight. And all the way over, I could listen to music. No, not what's on the radio. No, I could pull up my little phone here and listen to the music that I want to listen to. In fact, I could even dial into a radio station that's not even in this area. I could pull it down through something called an app. Ever heard of that? And then I don't need Rand McNally anymore. I can just say, find Trenton. And I'll get a little map that'll come up on my screen where I know where to go. Technology is amazing, is it not? In fact, any of you right now can just pull out this phone and you can go anywhere in the world. You can buy anything in the world. And you can talk to practically, I just got a text. Hello, Brother Phil. This is Jalen Jackson. It's camp registration right now underway. And I want you to look at my phone just in the few moments that I've been setting up here while we were singing. I've got like 15 messages. Anybody want to respond to these for me while I'm preaching? Folks in Jacksonville, folks over in Bradford County, here's somebody all the way over in, Middleburg, as well as Gainesville. And we can talk to anybody, anywhere, anytime. In fact, we have instant communication to practically anything we want. And I just want to begin this lesson with the idea that, yeah, technology is great. In fact, one of your elders, this is his Facebook page, he's a chiropractor. There's a way to do chiropractic right there. Just pound somebody's back. All right? I thought that was pretty funny. His wife, on the other hand, something a little more appealing to the family. She put her family up there. Certainly fun to see and read up on the Frasers, see how they're doing. By the way, I met one of the Frasers when I was out in Texas just a few weeks ago. Got a little insight there on Brother John. And then you have sites like this that are sure to jump up. You know, when the grandkids or anybody else decides to steal your phone, make a post, and there you go. And then you're going to see crazy things like this on Facebook. Who is this guy? A camp picture from many years ago. At least I hope, I don't know. You'll have to fill me in on that. And I want to know, first of all, why is he dancing and why does he need gloves to dance with? Anybody notice that? Is he going to start break dancing? Is there a better picture coming up here in a moment? Does he start spinning around on a hand? But it's a lot of fun. In fact, with technology, you could even promote spiritual things at will. This is a post, and I remember when Ken Williver posted this because he was coming here to hold a gospel meeting. Isn't that amazing? And he can post it like that and share a message like that. Technology is wonderful. But, if this was all about how wonderful technology is, you wouldn't have me here right now, would you? And we wouldn't be talking about technology. Because unfortunately, technology today is a lot like when I was growing up and you heard a lot of sermons about the television. And people were watching television all the time and it consumed us. But do you remember what would happen every night at around midnight when you were watching television? Anybody remember that? What would happen? You'd have the sound off. You would usually have a flag waving, the national anthem. You would see bars, and then you would hear that beloved sound, static, up until the morning show started at 6 a.m. Times have changed, haven't they? And unfortunately, things that are wonderful blessings can easily become great curses. I want to share with you tonight how much I appreciate the invitation to come and share this message with you. This is something that is actually very, very important to me because I work with a lot of kids and I work with a lot of young families. And unfortunately, the most common picture you'll see of a family today is this, where the whole family's together, but they're not really together. And ironically, the one who is right in front of them is not as important to them as the person who is off somewhere else in an internet world that they rarely see. And it's not just something that affects our teens, our young people. It's something that affects adults. Because what we have found as we've entered into this technology-driven world, this smartphone world, is that it has changed us. And it has changed us drastically. I want you to grasp and understand just how much people are actually using their phones. Here's some recent statistics with respect to the average use of phones by the average person in the United States. The average person will be on their phone 2 hours and 51 minutes. Now, let's just think about this for just a moment. Do y'all remember when texting first started? Anybody remember when you first started getting texts? And it was your little device and somebody texted you? If you were like me, by the time I would have to go, hey, get that letter, da-da-da-da, get that letter, and da-da-da-da. You remember you were trying to get everything in there? Then I would just say, call me. It's a phone. You know, would you just call me? And most adults, older people, would call you. Why? Because they don't want to have to get that letter. Kids, on the other hand, you could call them and they wouldn't answer. You text them and they answer immediately. What? Are you kidding me? So what have we done is, we say that we're on our cell phone for 2 hours, but we're really not on the phone. We're in social media world. In fact, the average person will spend 86 hours a month, the average college student, four hours and five minutes, and most of that time is social media. In other words, 90% of the time that we're spending on our phones is not about what we're going to have for dinner. Hey, you need to pick up something at the store on your way home. Hey, there's a very important thing that we need to talk about, or can I get this business deal done, or can we talk some church stuff? No. 90% of our time is social media. It's on Facebook, it's on Instagram, and it's on any other app that is a social app. The irony is that what is called social media actually has made us less social. Why? Because when I'm sitting down talking to you, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to somebody else. And at this rate, if we stay on our phones at this rate, by the end of our life, we will have spent 5 full years on our phone. And let me qualify this so you understand. The typical day or life, we would say, okay, you're only up about 16 hours a day. You'll say, no. That's 5 full years, 24 hours a day of our life will be spent looking at a phone. Looking at a phone. We think we're actually communicating and growing and learning. But in reality, we're probably missing a lot of opportunities. Last year, this was actually sent out on the social media page of my favorite college, Florida College. And I want you to look at the picture. They're in chapel. Anybody notice anything as you look at the kids in chapel? Anything kind of jumping out at you as they're all sitting there for chapel? I'll help you out here a little bit. There's many of them on their phones. They're on their phones. And I don't share this to pick at this college or to pick on these kids. I know a lot of those kids. They're my camp kids. That's why I went ahead and blocked out their names up there. I didn't want to embarrass them. Of course, they know I'm doing this to them. I have told them that. But you can see what's happened. Even in a spiritual moment, I can't ignore my phone. The funny thing about this picture was, is I kind of got tickled with the marketing department, is, you know, you might want to pay attention. But the point of the matter is, this is so common to have everybody looking up in any situation, in any crowd, at any time, would now be uncommon. In fact, can you ever think of a time that you've even gone to a restaurant in which everybody in the restaurant was actually just looking at the person across from them? In fact, how many times have we caught ourselves being drawn to our phone while we're sitting with others? Why has it consumed us? Why has it consumed us? One estimation recently was that 60% of the world has a smartphone. In fact, in the United States alone, 80% of the people living in North America have this technology. Well, the reason everybody has it and everybody wants to use it is actually something that we need to grasp and understand is it's been made that way, and it's been made to be addictive. Now, follow me on this. That device and the app are actually designed to be addictive. There was a TED talk given not too long ago by an individual by the name of Tristan Harris. And he worked for one of these big high-tech companies. And he shared in the TED talk that not only is the technology designed to be addictive, but there's actually meetings at many of these companies, such as Google and Facebook and Netflix, and what they're trying to do even more is to grab more people. And I want you to think about it from the standpoint of addiction. Back in my day, we had a thing, you might also have seen these in a Smithsonian, they're called magazines. You ever seen a magazine? How about a newspaper? Everybody seen a newspaper? All right. When you got done, what happened? When you got to the last page, what? That's it. There was nothing else to read. You get on your phone, and no matter what you're looking at, what happens? It never, ever, ever ends. Why? Because it holds you. It makes you stay there. Most of your social media apps have designs on them to pull you in, such as likes or streaks or comments, that constant need for approval. The idea that somebody, did they like my picture? I just put this picture up on Instagram. Who is like? I just posted this great picture of my kid. Who's liked it? Who hasn't liked it yet? Who didn't notice? Well, they only gave me a thumbs up. This person gave me a big smiley face. What's going on here? And we're consumed to check it. And it tells us how many likes we have. And we go, that was a good one. I got 100 likes on that one. And then you go to your friend's page, oh, she got 250. All right, it's on now. In fact, what's even more interesting is if you go to a social media page, this is the page that we use for our camp. I want you to look at the page, all right? The page is to advertise camp. So you got a nice pretty picture of camp. I've got camp registration being posted. But I want you to look at the left-hand column of my page. You know what everything there is on the left-hand column? It's not what I want to see. I want my camp page. But what I see on the left is other pages that I've either liked or been to. And do you see the number beside the page? It tells me there's so many new things on that page. Phil, look. That page has 7 new items you haven't seen. I must go there and find them now. And while you may have gone to post something on Facebook real quick just to get a message out, 3 hours go by because you've been hitting everything else on the side. It's designed that way to pull you in. Who has liked your stuff recently? Do they have something new? I want you to go back and consider this list on addiction. They appeal. These apps appeal to outrage. Anybody here on Facebook? Just out of curiosity. Who's there? Go ahead. You can say it. You're in church. Go ahead. Raise your hand. Yep. Has anybody here screamed when you read somebody else's Facebook post? Yes, you have, because I've screamed at some of your stuff. I'm just kidding. It's designed to promote outrage. And I don't mean that it's something malicious, but when somebody posts a comment or posts a thought or shares an article that we disagree with, or we find offensive, or we're not too sure about, we feel compelled to do what? Respond. And then they respond. And then you respond. And pretty soon you got a thread. And if you don't believe me, go to any preacher's website and you'll see exactly how this works. Because preachers are pros at this. And what it does is it draws us in, with this kind of intrigue. The idea that something might be offensive, that something that might grab my attention. And then what you've got to see more than anything else is who is really driving this? Advertisers. If so many people have phones, if so many people are using their phones, then that's where the eyeballs are. And the advertiser is the one saying to the company, hold them there longer so they will see my ad. So much so that the CEO of Netflix recently said at a meeting, our greatest competitor is Facebook, YouTube, and sleep. In other words, we have to find a way to keep them awake. And how many of us have found ourselves in bed after we said we're so exhausted, but we're just going to check a text, or we're just going to check a page, or we're just going to check something, that we find ourselves 30, 40 minutes later sitting there going, what am I doing? And the technology did its job. Are you addicted? I think, no, I'm not addicted. No. Well, are you? There's actually some signs of addiction. Have you ever panicked when you accidentally went off and left your phone at home? Oh, I don't have it. Oh, it's like my right arm's gone. I got to have that phone. Have you ever had phantom pulses? Come on, you ever had the phantom pulse? Got your phone's always sits in this front pocket. All of a sudden you go, hey. My phone didn't work, but I felt like it went off. I was in the news business for many years, but I've always had a cell phone. In fact, I've had as many as 2 to 3 cell phones at one time, depending on which truck we were in. And I've always carried my cell phone in my front left pocket. I kid you not, my quad will... vibrate sometimes and nothing has happened. It freaks me out. How does it do that? Have you ever used your phone at a dinner table? Or at times that you were sitting down talking with somebody and you allowed the phone to interrupt your conversation? Have you ever had tech neck? You ever seen people with their phones? They're actually easy to find. You ever checked your phone while you're driving? You're driving. You're in a loaded, heavy vehicle going 60 miles an hour or more, and you look down at a phone because you heard ding. Have you ever had somebody talk to you about how much you might be using your phone? It's actually a great app. It's called Break Free that can help you out. How many of you have an iPhone? Anybody here got an iPhone? All right, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to settings. Seriously, go to settings. Pull up your settings. All right now it's okay. You can use your phone in church. Yes, it is okay right now. I'm asking you to grab your phone, all right? All right? Go to settings, and I want you to scroll down to battery. Go to battery and click on battery, all right? When you get to battery, I want you to scroll down, and what you will see is what you've been looking at, how much battery life you have used for certain apps on your phone. You will see what has consumed you, and you can put for the last 24 hours or the last 7 days. Whew. The last 7 days, I've actually used it more as a phone. I got lucky. Last 24 hours, though, it says Instagram and Facebook. Not so lucky. It doesn't lie. And if your phone is constantly being used for things that really have no relevance in your life, you might want to watch out. Because it shows us how we're spending our time. But it's not just that it can be addictive. I want you to grasp and understand that when somebody is constantly on their phone, this is what the research shows, and there's multiple places you can go to see this research. It is all over the place, all right? Everything that I've presented to you so far is all over the place. Daily usage can lead to anxiety. In fact, it is very common for people who are constantly on their phones and checking social apps that they become rather anxious. Why? They've been drawn into that world, all right? They can have mood swings. They're isolated. How many times have you seen children now who are off in the corner on their phone and you can't even talk to them? And even more so, their parents say, "Ah, here's a phone. Just would you go on? Here's the pad. Would you go on? Here's the screen. Would you go on?" And they can't have a good conversation with you. Why? Because they're always on their phone and they live in isolation. They have the inability to communicate with others. What we're seeing right now is amazing. I work with college students, obviously living in a college town and then kids from camp. And what I'm finding and what I'm seeing, especially among boys, is that when boys get to their later teens, they don't know how to talk to girls. And kids are more apt to talk to one another by text than they are face-to-face, because if you put them in a face-to-face encounter, they really don't know what to do. And what we're also seeing is that many of these kids are more isolated now because the technology gives them a security blanket which in reality is not very secure at all. And the oxymoron is this. Social media has actually made us less social. There's lower attention span. And then there's narcissism. The constant posting of pictures. Look at me. Would you look at the dinner I made? Oh, would you look at what I got up and worked out this morning? Oh, look, I had flowers out in the flower pot. Oh, would you look at my child now? Here they are today. Oh, here they are tomorrow. Don't they look completely different? Look, this is us on Sunday. Oh, this is us on Wednesday. Oh, this is us on Thursday. Back to Sunday. This is us. Look, look, look. Oh, you can't post that picture. Oh, you can't post that. I got to get my hair right. Just a second. So, well, we're going to post it. Let's shoot this again. The better angle, better angle. Oh, yes, there we are. Selfies. Did you know that more people die each year from selfies than from shark attacks in the world? Why? Because they were putting themselves in a very dangerous situation to get a selfie. There was actually a young man who died not too long ago taking a selfie from a high-rise building. There and people have died taking their selfie in front of cars, taking a selfie in a car. Fifty 50% of teens admit they are addicted to their devices, according to Common Sense Media. Let me share the point even louder. When technology journalist asked Steve Jobs about his children and how much his children must love his new iPad, Steve Jobs replied flatly, "They haven't used it. We limit how much technology is in our home." His former right-hand man who helped design the iPad and to make it so simple that even a toddler could operate it recently revealed he sets very strict limits on how much his 10-year-old boys use technology. And they're not the only ones. Because those in the business, many of those in the business know how it affects our kids. How drastic is the effect? Well, here was a survey done not too long ago by AT&T. And the survey centered around internet usage. More importantly, internet outage. What would you give up to get internet? What would you be willing to live without so that you guaranteed you had internet? 87% of people said, you know what? I'll give up chocolate. I'll live without chocolate. Now, to me, that's pretty drastic, all right? But, you know, it's just a candy bar. You can live without a little sugar unless you're going dark chocolate. It's a little better for you, but nonetheless, giving up chocolate. 40% said, I'd give up sight in one eye. Really? I'll give up sight in one eye. 36%, half your hair. For some of us, that's no big deal. All right? We're already there. So I'd give up my hair. 30%, a finger. 29%, the sense of taste. I can live without taste. A dream job, 23%. Love, 19%. And then here's the big one. I know all those are huge. But 16% said, I would rather have the internet than human interaction. put me in an island in a cave, give me the internet, I'm good to go. I'm good to go. Well, what is acceptable? I want to share with you some numbers presented by the American Academy of Pediatrics, okay? What is acceptable? Well, according to the doctors, a child 0 to 18 months, zero. They don't need any screen time at all, even though they can figure it out. They don't need any screen time at all. 18 months to 3, no more than 20 to 30 minutes a day. 3 to 5 years, 1 hour absolute max. After that, it needs to be limited. It needs to be greatly limited. In fact, even the experts will tell you, don't put a screen in their bedroom. They shouldn't have a screen. When I was growing up, one place the television wasn't was where? In your bedroom. You're going to be watching what everybody else is watching. It's not sinking in there with you. But if you take this phone with you and go to your bedroom, you can go anywhere in the world. See anything that you want with a click of a button. That's why even the experts will say no bedrooms, no screens at dinner tables. In fact, what they're really pushing now, because of the obesity and the bad eating habits and the lack of social interaction among our children today, that there should be no screens before 1 hour of play or exercise a day. Don't even let it be in their grasp until they've run around for a little while. Now, most of us growing up, we can't fathom that. It's hard for us to grasp. If you wanted to go out and play, that meant you weren't doing chores most of the time. No, I sound like the old man who walked uphill both ways in the snow. I know. But how many of us know kids that don't even want to go out and play? Don't go out and play. Can't go out and play. You know one of the greatest challenges I have at camp every year? Is when we get out to the kickball field, kids don't know how to play kickball. I kid you not. I have a tough time identifying with that child. And then when I say run to the right and they run left, I just pick up the ball and beat them. That's all I can think to do. And then when I see their parents, I throw the ball at their parents saying, you have failed. You have failed. But you hand them this, and they can go crazy, can't they? I want you to grasp and understand, and I'm sure you've probably picked up on this already. I've been talking now for a little over 30 minutes. I hadn't shared with you one Bible verse. I hope that hasn't offended you. And I've done that on purpose, okay? Because everything that I presented to you was not the words of a preacher. It was not the words of the evangelist or the shepherd who gets up in the front of the congregation and goes, oh, brethren, we are sliding away. Oh, brethren, you better come back in. Oh, brethren, we're going down fast. I didn't want you to think it was in any way a preacher gimmick. Everything that I've showed to you came from the people who designed it, the people who have worked with it, and the people who have been dealing with it. And these were their words. And if they say, you better watch out, it's highly addictive, it's designed to be that way, it will change your behavior and your personality, and you better limit it and limit it greatly for your children, then how much more should we really consider it as children of God? C.S. Lewis, in one of his books that I thoroughly enjoyed reading, called The Screwtape Letters. I don't know if you ever read it. It's a great book. It's a book about, in his mind, the demonic world and how Satan tempts us. And in the book, there is this great tempter that is trying to tempt a man to turn away from the Lord. And here's the quote from C.S. Lewis, Screwtape Letters. All the healthy and outgoing activities which we want him to avoid can be inhibited and nothing given in return, so that at last he may say, as one of my own patients said to me on his arrival down here, I now see that I spent most of my life in doing neither what I ought nor what I liked. Did you hear the point? That the demon goes, I got this guy, and when this guy ended up down here, you know what he said? I spent my whole life doing what I didn't even like to do. And if you think about it, that's kind of happened to us. If I went up to you and said, you know what? Do you want to spend 3 hours today on your phone looking at everybody else, how they're having so much fun and getting mad at what everybody else is doing and getting upset about how they're reacting or not reacting? Would you say, yes, oh, give me 4 hours? No. You would say, that's a total waste of time. I'm not going to do that. But it draws us in. In fact, you want to look at it from a biblical way, and this is really kind of interesting when you think of it. The biblical warnings are these. In the book of Micah, woe to those who devise wickedness and work evil on their beds. When the morning dawns, they perform it because it's in the power of their hand. Now, let's just be very clear and transparent. In no way was God speaking to Micah about cell phones. All right? I think we can be rest assured that wasn't the immediate focus. But what he was talking about was idols. And the idol was something that would be from the device of an individual's hand, and it would consume them. It would overpower them, and it would become their God. And what they would do is they would think more about the idol than they would the Lord. Isaiah 2, verse 8. Their land is filled with idols. They bow down to the work of their hands, to what their fingers have made. Again, I don't think that the Lord was specifically referring to cell phones, but can anybody else see a correlation here? Granted, it doesn't look like an asterisk that the Canaanites would bow down to, or one of the Baals, but how many of us have done a lot of bowing? How many of us have spent a lot of time on it? How many of us have worked the wickedness and the power of our hands? Maybe our thumbs would be the better way to say it. The point is this. The temptation may be different, but the principle is the same. Turn in your Bibles, if you would, to the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 11. All right. While you're turning there, I'm going to just show you a quick cartoon that was sent to me by somebody when I was preaching this series back home in Gainesville. They said, maybe we have figured out what the fruit really was on the tree. It was an apple. It was an apple. Maybe that was it. In Genesis chapter 11, we find a story that most of you are probably familiar with. It's a story of the construction of the Tower of Babel. And often when we go to this story and we read it and we study it, we see it as just simply a historical event. If somebody was to ask us, well, how did you end up with so many nations? Why are there so many different languages? We would just simply say, because of the Tower of Babel, because they were building this tower. God didn't like the tower, and he said, all right, I'm splitting these people up. And so he scattered them because he changed their language. I want you to look at the story a little more closely. And I want us to understand specifically why God did what he did. I want you to grasp and understand that there was really nothing inherently evil about the tower. All right? So they're all getting together to build a tower. Was that in and of itself that offensive to God? That God said, you're not coming up here. If you think you're building a place again, no, it isn't happening. I'm cutting this. No, that wasn't really his problem. When you go and you look at the story, The first thing you need to grasp and understand is what God told man before the tower. If you go back to Genesis chapter 1, and then you also find this a little later in Genesis chapter 9, you have a recurring command that God has given man. And the command is this, in Genesis 1:28, as well as in chapter 9, verse 1, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. All right? You find that command a lot when you go through Genesis. Be fruitful, multiply. I want you to fill the earth. All right, go back to Genesis chapter 11, okay? What you find here is that in these days, the earth was not being filled. And so in chapter 11, verses 8 through 9, when man was building this tower, it says, so the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of all the earth. And they left off building the city a little later, and from there the Lord dispersed them over the face of the earth. I want you to grasp and see the point. God said, I want you to go all over the earth. I want you to be fruitful and multiply and go all over the earth. Man was saying, you know, let's just all stay together. God says, nope, you're going all over the earth. That's my will. In chapter 11 and in verse 1, the whole earth was of one language and one speech. And in verse 4, here's what they said. They said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. Anybody catch that? Anybody catch why God's upset with them? What they were actually doing, according to one commentator, was this. They were breathing defiance straight in the face of God. God says disperse. They said no. God says multiply. They said no. God says I want you to spread out. They said not going to happen. In fact, we're going to shore up our forces and we're all going to come together for this one tower and we're going to unify and we're going to get everybody to stay right here. And God says, no, you're not. And I'm going to make it happen by confusing your language. Because God knew if He confused their language, then they couldn't do what? They couldn't communicate. They couldn't devise together. What was interesting, if you look in chapter 11, verse 6, the Scripture says, and I'm reading from the English Standard Version, nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. And here's the point of that statement. When they're all together like that, when they're all together like that, they're not going to obey me. They're not going to follow God's commands. And so what you see when you go to the story is this. God understood that the unification was not good for them. Because what prevailed in that unified state was defiance to God. Defiance. And their intent was just that, to defile God. And so when God separated them, He literally separated them for their own good. Do you realize that today there are 2 billion people on Facebook? There are 1.5 billion mobile device users. Every day, 300 million photos are uploaded. And 42%, almost half now, 42% of marketers say social media is critical to their business. What does that tell us? That's where everybody is. And whenever we all get together with the world and we're all in it together, it's rarely going to work for our good. I want to share with you some things here, and I hope you're making a list, especially those of you that have parents, have kids or grandkids, or those of you who are actually honest with yourselves, that maybe you use your phone or mobile device too much. I want you to grasp and understand that we need to beware of our own lives, in our own lives, of actually building a tower of defiance. And so what I want to give to you just real quickly are some do's and don'ts that come with technology usage. And let me just kind of qualify this statement as I get into it. All right, now I'm turning more into preacher or shepherd Phil, okay? All right? And I'm speaking to you as a parent who has two kids in college now. I know. I got one going to graduate next week. Can you believe that? I know you're looking at me going, your kids are probably in kindergarten. You're right. They should be. But I'm speaking to you as a parent. I'm speaking to you as somebody who's seen, witnessed, dealt with, and personally experienced the challenges that come with technology. And I hope that you'll see this list as simply a list that is presented out of love, but a little bit of wisdom that comes with it. How do we need to beware of a tower of defiance? Well, I believe wholeheartedly, no child should have a phone before the eighth grade. That's absolute zero, nothing. My personal feeling is, you don't need a phone till you're driving. You don't need it. There's too many dangerous places there. You do not need a screen in your room. If in your house, your children can take the screen and go anywhere, you are helping your children go to Babel. Be careful. Don't text and drive. Whatever you do, never, ever, 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 ever text and drive. And that means don't be looking at it, poking at it, being distracted by it. You're in a vehicle, and really one of the most horrible things you'll ever witness is witness the tragedy of somebody losing their life innocently because of the negligence of someone else like that. No immodest clothing, please. First of all, you shouldn't be buying it. Second of all, you definitely shouldn't be taking a picture of it. And thirdly, why are you posting it? Do you not realize everything that you post on the internet, is literally something that you're wearing wherever someone else is watching it may be. For example, you think, well, I'm going to the beach. It's just me at the beach. I can wear whatever I want. It's the environment for the beach. Da, 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 da. I will argue with you on that. But here's the point I want you to see. That whatever picture you put up of you at the beach, when your grandmother or your preacher or anybody else pulls it up, even in the church building, you're in that attire in the building. Because that's what you just put up there. And what you just showed the world is your standard. Take it a step further. Don't go to any dark alleys. And we know where the dark alleys are. The porn, the gambling, any form of unrighteousness. You know when you're getting there because you're there, and if somebody else comes in the room or walks in the room, hey, how are you? Because you know you were there. Or you were talking to somebody you really shouldn't be talking to. You were communicating in a way that wasn't exactly godly. Another way that you kind of reveal your heart is in what you like. what you click you like. Parents, if you want to see really what your kids are into, go look at their likes. Who they liked. What they liked. If you want to see what your neighbor is truly like and get a better revelation of their heart, look at what they've approved of. Or they checked. Or they marked. Or they followed. It reveals something about us. Crazy thing happened a few years ago. 15-year-old girl. A 15-year-old girl kept getting advertisements from Target. Directly for her, in her name. Target came to the house. And the advertisements from Target were for maternity wear, children's clothing, baby formula, this, that, and the other. Well, the dad was outraged. In fact, he took those items and went to the local Target, and he said, "Why in the world are you sending my 15-year-old these things?" And of course, the manager of that local Target has nothing to do with marketing for Target. He's just a local store manager, but he just sat there and took the heat, and this guy got all mad, and he said, "I'll see what I can find out. I am so sorry. Please, 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 I'm so sorry. I had no idea why we would be sending your 15-year-old all those materials, this, that, and the other, da, da, da." And so a week later, just to be friendly, the store manager called the dad back and said, "Hey, I just wanted to follow up with you. I am so sorry. I wanted you to know I've called this, that, and the other." And the dad goes, "Let me just stop you right there. I know why. I just found out today that my daughter is pregnant. And she was on her computer doing searches of maternity wear, maternity items, and baby things. And here's the point, folks. Target knew she was pregnant before her daddy did. Why? Because everywhere you go with that IP address on your computer, everything that you click on with your phone, an advertiser knows you. Anybody ever done a search for an item? Looking for some shoes, maybe some good running shoes. And you're looking at shoes, you go, "I like those." Da, 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 da. You go, "Oh, I don't want to go buy any of those. I don't need any shoes. I'll just close my shoes." And so you forget about the shoes. A little bit later that day, you pull up Facebook and you go, "Oh, there's those shoes again." And they came up in an ad. And then you go to Fox News or you go to some ABC News site, and then an ad comes up, "Oh, there's those shoes again." And everywhere you go that day, "There's those shoes. There's those." Do you know why that is? Because advertisers pay a lot of money to be connected to you. And they know you. And it reveals you and me to them. When you're on social media, please don't argue. Just don't. If a friend of yours slips off into Stupidville, don't go there with them. Get on a different train. Have you ever in your life seen a great argument on Facebook where somebody was just arguing, fighting over this? "Oh, my political candidate, your political candidate, blah, 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 your issue, that issue, blah, blah, blah." And did you ever see somebody go, "Huh, you know what, you are exactly right. I have totally changed my mind. Thank you for opening my eyes." Anybody? Has anybody? No. It just divides us. It divides us. In fact, back home in our church family, I have implored our church family, no political post. Don't get into it. Don't get into the big issues of the day from the standpoint that you know that they divide people. It's not the place to do it. Why? Because it's not a healthy debate there. It's a pot shot. It's hand grenades. I'll blow you up with this one, you blow me up with that one, and it makes us mad. Don't fall for it. If you feel that you have to respond to someone, do it the way Christ talked about it. Do it privately. Actually, use your phone as a phone. "Hey, can I talk to you about that?" I can't tell you how many times I've called a camper or even a parent and said, "Hey, can I get you to think about something?" Or just shot a private message just between us. "Can I get you to think about this?" And you know, every single time that I've done that privately, and really slowed down and spoke with grace and kindness. Every single time they went, you know, you're right, I'm going to take that down. I said, well, that's a great idea. I don't want you to think I'm making you do that. No, no, no. That's a good idea, Mr. Phil. I don't want to give impression. I said, I love you for that. Be careful of fake news. When that candidate that you hate, bad news comes up about them, and you go, oh, I knew it. I knew that he slapped babies. I knew it. In fact, I bet he bites the head off puppy dog. Oh, there it is. There's a story. It's fake news, folks. Don't share it. Don't share the lies. Be careful of criticizing. In fact, be careful also, and you may find this a little bit weird, be careful of being preachy. Be careful of falling into the trap of what Jesus talks about in the Sermon on the Mount. I want y'all to tell you, I did so many good things today, I just can't keep it in. I got up early at 6 o'clock this morning, I actually fed my children, I did something nice for my husband, and then I went and fed all the old ladies at church, and then I went and I raked the leaves off my neighbor's porch, and then I went over here and did this. I'm just having such a good day. Clang, 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 bang the pots and pans, look at me. Be careful. And be careful of being the person. And this is going to sound weird. Who is preachy? That everything you share is a sermon. Everything you share is this. And I have nothing against sermons. But sometimes it is just appropriate to say, you know, that's a nice picture of you two. Instead of, oh, hasn't God just been glorious to the both of you? Look at your wonderful youth and all the paintings that he's painted in the air. And da, 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 let me quote a few more verses here and this, that, and the other. Would you just say yes? Because indirectly what we can do sometimes is claim the symbol. Be very careful of arrogance and sarcasm. It doesn't go over very well in print. Sarcasm usually doesn't work unless you can see somebody's face. You know that? In fact, if somebody's listening to some of the things that I've just said here tonight and they were hearing it on the podcast or CDs or whatever you have, they're going, oh, I can't believe he said it. I had a funny look on my face when I said it. Because sarcasm requires that. It's hard to put in print. Be careful of being the person who's daily posting. Be careful. Because it can be an addiction. And just be careful of how you use your time. All right, enough of the don'ts. Let's go back to where we began this lesson. I got a phone. I plan to keep using it. Yeah, look, I broke it. I fell yesterday. It was the funniest thing. I was taking some pictures at the swamp of people, and I was one of those people that fell off. Got a big old bruise. Y'all see it? It's great right here. And the worst part, I broke my phone. And that's when I really got funny. I was like, here I was hobbling around. I'm like, oh, my phone, though. I'll take some broken ribs as long as my phone's okay. But I got a phone. And I'm going to go get another one because I hate it that it's cracked. It's driving me crazy. It's got a banana look to it. Anybody want a phone cheap? I will sell it to you, by the way. But phones have a great purpose. I'm not going to go back to Rand McNally. I'm not going to go back to collect calls, okay? In fact, some people get so bad, oh, I don't want technology. Oh, I don't need technology in my life. Then great. When you're cleaning your clothes with a wash tub and a washboard, give me a call. We like technology. It can improve our lives. So let's use it for good. What are some things that we can do real quickly to help us build a bridge of hope instead of a tower of defiance? Well, share joy and gratitude. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Show gratitude with people out there. Share the thanksgivings and the kindness and the adoration. Share the love. Be an encouragement to others. Be one who uses your phone to actually text. Don't you enjoy it when somebody gives you a text and just says, you know, I really enjoyed talking to you yesterday. That meant so much. I hope you have a good day. In fact, some of you, hopefully you have this, what I have. I have multiple text groups. Multiple text groups. A lot of friends, camp friends, and we got different names for our text groups. And when we find funny stuff or things that we want to share, we instantly text it with one another, and it makes us all laugh, and we enjoy it. In fact, I was sharing this exact lesson one night to a bunch of kids, and my phone was lighting up. It was a group of four gospel preachers, and it was the funniest thing in the world. They were all watching the Olympics. I'm off preaching, working with kids. They're watching the Olympics. And they're deciding they're going to have their own bobsled team, and they wanted to see who all was wanting to be on it. I'm not going to tell you their names, because I don't want to embarrass them. But it was hilarious. Who's going to be driving? Who's going to be the brake guy? Who's the fastest? Well, you're not fast. And everything. It was a blast. Like a bunch of schoolgirls. But it was fun. Use your phone. Use your phone to encourage relationships, but speak with grace. When you talk about speaking with grace in Colossians 4, verse 6, that means sometimes sharing words that haven't been earned. They're words of favor. I'm about done, I promise. Promote good things. Seek stronger fellowship. Build friendships and relationships. In fact, what's really good with it is that you can use it to encourage spiritual things. If you're not using technology to promote your church, you are missing out. You're missing out. When I was growing up, it was radio programs. Not that effective today. But blogs, posting sermons, podcasts, it's free. Use it. Share it. Share thought. I guarantee you Everett does not get mad on Monday morning when he sees somebody post, oh, Everett had the best lesson on Sunday. You ought to go listen to it. Hopefully he did have a great lesson. Did you have a good lesson this morning? No? Yeah. He did. He's being modest, isn't he? Share it with him. Post it. Share it. Seek the opportunities to build spiritual encouragement. Seek the opportunity to comfort and uphold the weak. We can do that. Just like Scripture says in Romans 12, rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Take advantage of educational resources. Do you realize how many places you can go to get a lot of learning and education? There's actually opportunities to take college classes for free. Great podcasts that will encourage you and help you in many aspects of your life for education. That's one of the best things you can do in your car instead of listening to the radio or listening to music. Pull up a good podcast. Take advantage of these things. I'll share with you some good blogs. Shane Scott has a great blog. If you haven't read it, think on these things. And another real good one is by Doy Moyer up in Vestavia, Alabama, a fabulous blog on the authority of Scripture. Overcome evil with good. That's who we are. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. And that's what I want you to hear. I know there's a lot of dangers, there's a lot of pitfalls, there's a lot of bad places to go. But this is part of our lives now. Like it or not. Doesn't mean you have to have one. It doesn't mean your kids have to have one. But if you do have one, use it to glorify the Lord. Use it for His purpose. And be careful of the traps. Instant communication. Instant messenger. Instant verification. Instant like. It's wonderful. But did you know that our God's been in the instant business long before this came out? That in an instant, your sins can be forgiven. In an instant, you can go directly to the throne room of God and speak to Him at any time. In an instant, through the washing of baptism in the blood of Christ, your sins can be washed away. The instant. And there's no greater communication in the world than to communicate with your Lord. And if we can help you in any way do that tonight, or if we can help you in any way deal with the addiction of this instant gratification, we invite you to come while we stand and while we sing.